Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story. We break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long in studio at 5:45. Steve Geller will join us. It'll be our triple option feature, and it'll be our pick five because we don't have six today. So it'll be pick five on our selections for the weekend and also the national championship game. Charlie, we got a little bit certainly good news with the Pelicans in a win last night. And listen, don't give no kind of
I didn't see anything, Mike.
Bad feelings about it. You take that win any way you can.
That was a block in my eyes. No, of course.
But when I saw it, I was like, oh, no. You blew this damn game and then swallowed the whistle. Man, thank you, Trey Murphy. You got the W for the Pels. We'll talk a lot more about it. Before we go, we got a couple people hanging on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line. Before we go to Paul and Bart, man, I think about Bob Uecker today passing away.
Man.
And growing up and watching Bob do television, baseball. He was a longtime announcer for the Milwaukee Brewers, and we watched him on ABC. He was a regular. And I'm talking about a regular on Tonight Show, Johnny Carson. Man, and Bob had great stories. And, you know, he was in a number of movies, but Bob played himself. It was no acting job. He did the exact same thing he would do. I never got that opportunity to meet Bob Uecker. It's something, man, I would love to have done, but it never quite worked out. But so many people that had worked with him or been around him, the story's the same. He was a good dude in life, you know, and even when he made it really sort of big, and he did all the commercials. Ah, they got me in the front row, and you see he's way up in the stands. That was Bob. I mean, he did a great job, had an unbelievable life, and he would always, when he'd do motivational speeches, he would always introduce himself as the best 200-hitting catcher in the history of Major League Baseball.
There you go.
And so he was a lousy, but he didn't make it to the majors. But, right. You know, and so, listen, when you playing at the Major League level, you've made a big jump there. But Bob Uecker, God bless him, passing away today. So many memories of watching him, if it was in movies or in television, and his play-by-play skills were just tremendous. I think it got overlooked how good he was behind the mic calling baseball games. Charlie, he was fantastic doing that. And he became a star. At this time, we're talking about in the 80s, when you were regular on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, man, you have made it big.
No, by all accounts, Bob was also a very funny guy. I mean, that's something you hear. He makes everyone around him laugh. He was the broadcaster in Major League, the Major League Baseball series, if you remember that, like, movie series the 80s and 90s. And so, some fun facts. He hit 200 on the dot as a professional,
that's
Mike.
Correct.
Like, that was his career average in the MLB when he played from 1962 to 1967. He hit 200 on the dot. But as he said all the time, he was the best 200-hitting catcher around. Anyways, as a broadcaster, Mike, 1971 through 2024 with the Milwaukee Brewers.
Think about that time frame. Nobody's going to do that again, Charlie.
53 years.
53.
And so you're looking at what he did as a broadcaster. He was a fantastic personality. But, you know, I was even listening to him when the Brewers were playing the Mets in the wild card series this past year. And so I had no idea that he was 90 years old.
Like, his mind was so fertile. even at that age. Because a lot of times, you know, and he credited to the fact that he always kept himself busy. And, you know, we've all had people in our family who, man, they've lived a good life and everything. And as soon as they shut it down, boy, you see the drop off mentally and physically. And but with Bob, man, he loved doing. Now, he wasn't a regular toward the end, but he was still doing a lot of Milwaukee Brewers games. And he was so good at it.
Yeah.
Even at in his 80s and 90 years old, how good Bob Uecker was behind the mic. And again, I think it gets overshadowed because of the character he played, you know, in the movie series, on television. He was an unbelievable storyteller. And, man, he played with some really good baseball teams with St. Louis, too.
Yeah, and he won a World Series as well. But I don't know, Mike. It's something that just caught me off guard because, once again, I had no idea he was that old. I didn't realize he was 90 because when I was listening to him, as I mentioned, full of life, like a great broadcaster, great broadcasting voice, by the way. So, yeah, I mean,
He was like the guy next door you talking to. You know, you sitting outside, you know, you're on a rocker, he's on a rocker, and you talking and everything else. And that was the voice with Bob. And, you know, he was always funny, as you brought up, and that just a tad outside, you know, in those Major League Baseball movies. But he was super with it, enjoyed every moment of his life. He always said, I enjoyed life. And, man, to live that long and to enjoy what you're doing and have the ability to do it basically almost to the end of your life is remarkable.
Yeah.
And to do it that well.
He never retired, Mike.
Never, never retired. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Bart in New Orleans. Bart, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mr. Mike, for taking my call. Just want to get your opinion. I listened to Pat Mascolonat. He seemed to be promoting Mike McCarthy taking over the Saints job. And like I said, I have a lot of respect for his opinion, but I don't agree with that.
Okay, what did Matt say again? Tell it to me one more time.
That he was promoting McCarthy?
I was listening to his podcast. There's a podcast.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got you.
Podcast, he seems to be promoting Mike McCarthy taking over the Saints job.
Well, I think what he has said, like a lot of people, and listen, I would be in that corner too. He's experienced. He's won. You know, in Green Bay, he's won in Dallas. He did win a Super Bowl. Man, it's hard to win a Super Bowl. I think what's happened in our lifetime, the Patriots with Belichick and Brady, and what's happened in Kansas City with Andy Reid, Pat Mahomes, man, anybody can do that. Now, it's not easy. It's difficult. And when you look at the candidates, Mike McCarthy now, he's got his pick of the jobs he would want. If he wants to go to Chicago, I think if he wanted to come here to the Saints and said, hey, look, guys, let's make the deal done, I think it would happen. Again, there's a lot of people that dislike the Cowboys and kind of how it ended almost every year in disappointment. You win 12 games, three straight years? Man, that is really, you've accomplished something there in the NFL. But, you know, with Dallas, and I think once you win a championship, you always want to drink from that gold cup. You want to be the champ again. And I think it's been a long time in Dallas. You think about with the Saints, the 2009 season. That's not yesterday either. But Mike McCarthy, man, for me, I think he would be an excellent, excellent candidate for the Saints. I got a lot of respect for Mike. Knew him a little bit when he was here. And he was the offensive coordinator, quarterback coach with Jim Haslett. And so I think he'd be an excellent pickup, to be honest with you. They could do a lot worse than Mike McCarthy. And now once Mike Rabel got out of the mix, I think he's become the guy. When you look at the Bears job, you look at the Saints job, even though I think with the Saints job, to be honest, I've said this and I'll say it again. I think it's Aaron Glenn's job if he wants it or not. If Aaron wants it, I think it's his. The big question mark is, does he take this job or does he take the job with the Jets?
Right.
That's going to be the big question. I got no qualm with Mike McCarthy. None at all.
I don't understand why Saints fans would stick their nose up in McCarthy either. I mean, you've watched this team play for the last 3 years. Look at what Dallas accomplished over a three-year time span with McCarthy. Yeah, they didn't have the playoff success, but they were in the hunt.
He made Cooper Rush at least respectable when he won some games down the stretch. Cooper Rush at quarterback.
No, because one of my buddies was texting me the same thing. I mean, some Saints fans don't want McCarthy at all. I'm just like,
I hear it all.
I don't really get it.
I got a lot of Saints fans don't want Aaron Glenn. Oh, he's too tied to the prior regime with Sean Payton.
Well, maybe
want
it's
somebody
like,
new. My thing is, that don't make any difference to me. All I want is the best candidate for the job. I want an alpha. I want a guy, when he steps in that room, he becomes the boss. And we've heard about it too many times, that once Sean Payton walked out of that office, the fear factor walked out too. And there is a certain part, people don't like to hear it or don't like to talk about it, but fear as motivation. I don't care how good you are. That fear of disappointment, fear of failure, fear of losing your job, fear of losing your money. Sean always had that little edge with him, or say little edge, more than a little, to put that in you that, hey, if you don't get it done, I'm going to get somebody else to do it. And I do think that that factor walked out of that room with Sean Payton. And I think they need that to come back into this organization. Thanks so much for the call, Bart. Appreciate it. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Paul in Metairie. Paul, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Mike. Yeah. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. I'm watching these playoff games, and I'm seeing these guys that used to play for the Saints getting rave reviews from the analysts and all this. You know, of course, Trey Hendrickson's not in the playoffs, but, you know, his is one of the main names, guys that we let slip through the cracks. But Zach Bond, one of the coaches apparently saw him and say, hey, let's move this guy from defensive line to linebacker. You know, all of a sudden he turns into a Pro Bowler. How come one of the Saints coaches couldn't have done the same thing? And then now Alex Anzalone, guy was saying what a player he is. You know, I think he may have been injured or something, and he's coming back, or he came back or whatever. But I don't know who's in charge of deciding what players to pay and which ones not to pay. But I think they need to work on that.
Paul,
and as far as the head coach, yes, sir.
Paul, I'm going to tell you, I agree with you. This all boils down to one thing, personnel. You don't have enough.
Right.
You can go all around it and try to say, well, we've drafted well. I like the players we got. Okay, what? Everybody in that organization is going to say that. This boils down to this football team does not have enough good young core players to win. Does not. Think about it. Under 27 years old, name me one guy other than Eric McCoy that you would say for sure could start for every team in the NFL.
Right. That's what they were saying.
So it boils down to, you had some injury issues, but they got a lot of teams like that. Anzalone, here was the crazy part about Alex, and I talked to him about this because I had scouted him. He got hurt a lot in high school, got hurt a lot at Florida, got hurt quite a bit with the Saints. And it was like, man, almost hurt every year, one thing or another. Goes to Detroit, he stayed healthy up until this year, and then he gets hurt. He misses some time, but he's back in the lineup. The Saints' plans for Zach Bond, I'll never get this. He was basically an edge rusher at Wisconsin. Okay, Sean Payton's comment was, our vision of him is that middle linebacker. Come on. He never played that position before in his life. But Vic Fangio, in the offseason, made the comment, I went after two outside linebackers, Devin White. And it didn't work out with Devin, and he ended up with the Houston Texans after they cut him loose with Zach Bond. He saw something in Zach that he felt really strongly about, right fit. Right player, right fit. And look what's happened to Zach.
Loomis addressed that during his end-of-season presser where he talked about, we tried to re-sign Zach and it just didn't work out.
Okay, they wasn't giving him a starting spot.
Exactly.
He got an opportunity
time,
in Philly.
So to speak, and now he's an all-pro. So,
okay, Caden Ellis sort of made the same comments when he left the Saints and signed with the Falcons.
A lot of linebackers.
That, man, you know, I wasn't going to get a chance to play a lot. I do give him a little bit of credit. Late in that last year with Caden, they used him as an edge rusher. Boom, you saw what he could do. Man, Caden Ellis, a hell of a
And then he got paid.
And he got paid by the Falcons because he trusted Ryan Nielsen was there at that time. Thanks so much for the call, Paul. I appreciate it. But I agree with you 100%. This boils down to personnel decisions with the Saints. Draft-wise, who to keep, who not to, and free agent pickups. That's what it boils down to. And they have not done a good job at it. You can sugarcoat it all you want. But if you were doing a good job, you'd have won more than five games this year. Bottom line. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, he covers the NBA for ESPN, Bobby Marks. Bobby, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Bobby, listen, the way the Pelicans have been playing, I'll take a win any way I can get it. And last night, okay, I'm watching, and I see Trey go up, and I'm like, oh, man, that looks like goaltending to me. And then all of a sudden, you know, no whistle, and so you ended up with a W. Both teams were really depleted last night, both the Mavericks and also the Pelicans. But, you know, this team has won three out of the last four games. They've dug themselves a massive, massive hole to get out of. But they got a little fight in them, and I like to see that. And, boy, I wanted to ask you not only about that, but also if we see the growth in Trey Murphy as a basketball player. Just I think he is a tremendous, tremendous asset to the Pelicans out on the court.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, I've been there when I was in New Jersey. The hardest thing to do is kind of look up at the standings and whether you're 9-30 or you're not going to make the playoffs, which even the play-in, which is not going to happen for New Orleans. But I do think there's a similar kind of what we saw with Memphis go through last year. They were able to kind of use, most of the season kind of as like kind of an audition, right? A developmental. Development your own players, audition for who kind of works. And that foundation without Moran and some of the other guys, now you see Scottie Pippen Jr. And now you see, some of their younger players really take a step. And I think that's the goal if you're in New Orleans. Certainly kind of don't look at the standings, just make it, 0-0 going into every game here and trying to, whether it be Jordan Hawkins or Trey or Eves, some of your younger players that are going to be here next year, as far as when this roster is healthy and with whatever the parts look like next year, they can kind of hit the ground running.
Yeah, your thoughts on Trey Murphy? Because man, that guy, we've seen the growth in him. His first year here, it looked like somebody had put plywood right over the top of the goal. He couldn't hit anything. He got sent down, came back up. But now he has really grown into a big-time player in the NBA.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think certainly the extension that he signed before the start of the season kind of a little bit reflects as far as what he accomplished in the prior years as far as his ability to score the ball, basketball, certainly his second, third year. And then I think what you've seen this year certainly has been, in a season marred with injuries, has been their, probably their most consistent player here. So I think you have to be, happy with what Trey's been able to do for you.
How surprised are you to watch Eve Mise and his growth? I mean, 1 year at Baylor. He's a really smart guy. We heard some reports early on in the training camp. Hey, he's a lot better than a lot of people think he'll be in year one, and we've got to see it. He's not only a really good defensive player, and that part was always obvious, but now he's developed a pretty good offensive side.
No, I mean, I saw him. Yeah, I saw him in college, and then I remember sitting in Las Vegas at summer league and sitting next to somebody, and he had not had a good summer league, and the person was concerned, like, man, like, I don't know if this was a good pick or not. And I said, listen, summer league kind of does a little bit of a disservice for bigs. You basically have to have the right point guard on your roster, and what he looks like in July could be a lot different than what you see in October and November and during the regular season. And I think you've seen that. I mean, certainly, you know, that was kind of the, you know, after Jonas goes to, goes to the Wizards in free agency, and then you kind of try to patch the center position. Who's going to be your center? Do we have to go trade for one and stuff? And then when you get a guy that's, man, a first-round pick on an inexpensive contract, and that can be your guy moving forward here, that solves a lot of different things, because now you can kind of use some of those resources to address other things.
And Bobby, going back to Trey Murphy, I just want to get your thoughts because, you know, he's really taken that year four leap. I mean, stats up across the board, making a jump from basically 15 to 22 points per game, and his scoring numbers even up in 2025, the month of January. Yeah. But just your thoughts on, you know, for one, I think he's being way under the radar for most improved player. I know that's kind of Kate Cunningham's award to lose, but I'm looking at some books and I'm not even seeing him listed. I know the Pelicans have had a miserable year, but I feel like he should be getting more respect for that type of an award just based off the jump that he's made in year four.
No, yeah, you hit it right on the head. I think, unfortunately, for those type of roles, you know, sometimes people look at kind of where that team is in the standings, you know, like, Malik Monk, I think you could have made a really good argument a year ago, whether it be, I think, for sixth man, and he didn't win, right? Because New Orleans, I mean, Sacramento was a playing team and stuff, so I do think guys who are on teams that are struggling do get overshadowed. But I agree with you. I think, certainly where he is, last year, and last year he was pretty good. And then, you know, he goes this year as far as where, as far as the ability to kind of, average close to 22 points. I do find it funny, and I heard, Brian Windhorst talking about that. I felt like this all along. I'm like, man, if you're the number one pick, how do you get most improved, right? Like, shouldn't you?
That's a great point.
A little bit. I think Maxey might have been in that equation. Oh, Maxey was in the 20s, but there was, guys in the lottery. Like, I mean, I'm surprised Victor's not mentioned, right? But man, he's most improved. I'm like, well, he did go number one. So, like, there is already a pretty good strong base there.
Yeah, and it's not like he wasn't very good in his rookie campaign either. Victor was fantastic. And so, I see his name mentioned more than Trey, and it kind of blows my mind a little bit, Bobby. But moving on, I think that, what Trey's done this year is exactly what the Pels were hoping when they gave him that extension in the offseason, and now he's made that jump. And now the question kind of becomes, we're 3 weeks away from the NBA trade deadline, and I think Trey Murphy's ascension obviously has made Brandon Ingram expendable on this team. And so you're talking about the players that the Pels are going to move on from, ahead of February 6th, 3 weeks from today, I just think it feels like Brandon Ingram's not going to be a Pelican in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I would say that would probably be the guy to circle. I think you have to. But you got to get the right deal. I think that's the hardest part about all this, is that when you have a guy that's making $36-37 million and is a good player, but it's been out for most of the year with certainly with the injury here, kind of what's the return value? And I think for Griff, it's like, okay, can we get a first round pick? Can we get maybe one really good nice young player? Can we get some flexibility financially going forward? So I would say out of the group there that you would probably circle. Brandon's name. I think, listen, they're going to make a trade because they're not, I'm sure Mrs. Benson doesn't want to pay the luxury tax. So they're $1.4 million over. And when you're a team that's, in the lottery, you're not going to pay the luxury tax, which you can get probably $18, $19 million back here. So there's going to be a trade out there somewhere, whether it be Brandon or whether it be maybe one of their minimum guys they're moving off to kind of dip under there.
One of the things, Bobby, must watch tonight, okay, the Cleveland Cavaliers got only five losses all season long, and they go up against the Thunder, who have six.
They played like a couple weeks ago.
And man, a couple weeks ago, that was a great game. Your thoughts on, man, just the Cavaliers. I think we all thought they would be good, but I don't know if we thought they would be this good. Now, the Thunder's a different story. You can see all the pieces in place, and they got a chance. They got a chance now to get into the championship game, so to speak. But your thoughts about tonight, the Cavaliers and the Thunder?
I'm intrigued, and I said this a little while ago when I was doing TV. I'm intrigued about the different styles, because you've got Hartenstein, who had been really good for Oklahoma City, is out. And you've got, the equivalent of, I guess, the Twin Towers, right, with Mobley and Jared Allen. You got just two bigs there. So that's intriguing, because Oklahoma City's best lineup is when they go that 6'6 and below lineup. right, with Shea and Jalen Williams and Casey Wallace and Lou Dort and, you know, guys like that and everything. So I'm intrigued as far as the style that, you know, both those guys, both those teams, different styles there as far as what they're able to do that. I think it's going to be a heck of a matchup. Certainly Oklahoma, playing Oklahoma City is a different animal as far as what goes on there and everything like that. And I think it's interesting, you know, they make a change. They bring back basically the same roster in Cleveland. They make a change with Kenny Atkinson. Kenny's probably favorite for coach of the year, but the guy who replaced J.B. Bickerstaff is doing a heck of a job in Detroit, which is one of the, you know, which was one of the great stories there.
And before we let you run, Bobby, it's kind of a two-part question for you. As I mentioned earlier, 3 weeks away from the NBA's trade deadline, we talked a little bit about Brandon Ingram. You know, I guess my first question for you would be, you know, what is the potential return for someone like that on an expiring contract and, you know, him having to sign an extension wherever he goes? We know what happened this past offseason where he wanted a max from New Orleans. New Orleans wasn't willing to give him that. So, you know, whatever potential team makes a move for him is going to want to be able to lock him down long term, obviously. So, you know, what's the early kind of thoughts on that? And then also, you know, the Pelicans roster, is there anyone else that you could see potentially getting moved on? I know the stove will start to heat up in a little bit here, so this is kind of early, but just wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Brandon, I think it's a matter of who has interest in him and what's the price of whether it be in an extension or what's going to be the price to retain him in free agency in a market where there's not a lot of whole lot of money out there to go out and sign and sign free agents here. I think that plays a big role in it. Where if he's going to extend as soon as he's traded, then maybe it's a little bit more. I do think, you know, certainly I think, you know, the value is at least a first round pick, I would think. You know, as far as players, I think you have to be careful because if you're kind of looking to kind of reboot this roster a little bit in the off season, and if it's whether it be Trey or DeJounte and Herb when he gets healthy, and you know we'll see what happens. You know, certainly with Zion, I think you do want that flexibility there. So I do think it's a matter of kind of what you know. I think it's a matter of kind of if where he's being traded to is going to be his home for the foreseeable future.
Bobby, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always great insights from you, and we appreciate your time.
Thanks, Bobby.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All righty. Bobby Marks does a great job covering the NBA for ESPN. Come back, more sports talk. Philip, hold on. We'll go right to you. I know you got a call about Clint Kubiak and the Saints, and we'll take you right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Philip in New Orleans. Philip, in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Mike, Charlie, how y'all doing?
All right, what's up, Philip? I'm good.
All right. Mike,
yes,
a comment and a question.
Okay.
I see Clint Kubiak is having a second interview with Seattle, and normally when that happens, I mean, there's interest there. And the question is, you think the Saints, you know, have a plan B or looking at somebody in case we lose him? And who would you recommend?
Philip, this is my thing, and I never believed those reports that some people putting out about a month or so ago that, whoever was going to be the new head coach, he was going to be forced to keep assistant coaches here.
That was always dumb.
Come on. The new head coach is going to have his selection of his assistant coaches. And Monday, when Mickey Loomis had his press conference, he was specifically asked about it, and he said that new coach will get his choice of his staff. You know, if he wants to keep a Darren Rizzi or anybody else that's on the staff, that's up to the new coach. Now, I do agree with you. When you get a second interview, I talk to a lot of agents in this business. That first interview sometimes is just to kind of get to know you. The second interview is a lot more serious.
And it's in person.
That's about basically, okay, what is it going to cost us for you to come here? Because you know the situation already. So I do think they are in serious talks with Clint Kubiak, Seattle. No question about it when you have that second interview. If it's viral or if it's in person, the second interview normally is the interview, you sort of cut the deal. But my thing is, when the new head coach comes in here, He's going to pick his own offensive coordinator, his own defensive coordinator. He's going to get his choice staff-wise, and it should be that way. I think that, you know, a lot of times you have a say in who gets drafted. You have a say in the free agent pickups. And Sean had a lot of say. I'll be honest with you. He had a lot to say about it. Now, Mickey Loomis has always said he has the final word, but coaches do have a say. But on staff and who makes the final 53, that goes down to the head coach. So he's going to make that. Whoever they bring in, he is going to make that decision on who he wants as the new offensive coordinator. And to be honest with you, a second interview to me tells me Clint will be in Seattle coaching Geno Smith.
Right, and Grubb got fired, you know, a couple weeks ago at this point after 1 year there. At the same time, we have a text here, Mike, 9699, saying, why would Clint Kubiak leave an OC job to take an OC job?
He's short of a job here.
He's not guaranteed one. Exactly. So that's kind of, you know, responding to what you just said, Mike. With a new head coach coming in that's going to have the ability to pick his OC, it's not guaranteed that Clint Kubiak is going to be the OC of the Saints. So that's why Mickey said that you can block it. If you're, you know, a GM, you can block a lateral move. But Mickey said that he's not blocking, you know, Clint interviewing with any kind of OC job on the open market because he's not guaranteed to be the OC of the Saints next year under a new head coaching staff. So he interviewed with Cleveland, but Cleveland ended up promoting from within. Tommy Reese is now their new OC.
Good luck with that one.
Dude, he's like 32. Like, he's a young cat, and they're hoping that it works out. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. But he had interviewed with them, and then now he's, as you mentioned, having a second interview with Seattle. Mike Garofalo of NFL Network, I used it in the sports flash there, said that he is, quote-unquote, in the driver's seat for the Seahawks job.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can see that. With that second time around,
basically
what's happened is your agent, to get into the nuts and bolts of it, after the first interview, and then they want you back for a second one, that agent of yours is contacted that team, and they've contacted him about, hey, what is it going to take financially? What are we looking at here with Clint Kubiak to bring him in? He already knows sort of what, because McDonald, he's a defensive-oriented coach.
Right.
So Clint's going to get hold of the offense. That'll be his babe. Now, with that running attack they got, that I thought they underachieved last year. I didn't think their offensive line played very well. Geno is always going to be Geno. You're going to have some really good games, and then you got some games where what happened there? But his deal is to try to bring out the best in Geno Smith. But my thing, you know what's really best for Geno Smith? When you got a running game going. And he got two stud running backs there.
They need an offensive line, Mike. I think their offensive line issues were pretty rough this year, especially on the interior. But as far as, you know, their rushing attack, Charbonnet, Kenneth Walker, when Kenneth Walker's healthy,
really good.
That's a good 1-2 punch. I agree with 100%. And Jackson Smith and Jigba made a nice jump this year in year two in the NFL. They have some pieces on offense. DK Metcalf, obviously, as well. So it would be a decent landing spot for someone like Kubiak, and I think there's obvious clear interest in both sides.
And believe me, with the money that they got, the owner, ain't got to worry. Cash ain't going to be an issue
right,
on that particular part. But basically, that's what it's all about, Philip. They, you know, he's not assured of a job here. And so I think, you know, he sort of asked the organization, can I go out and look? They said, yeah, go ahead, because the new head coach, there's no guarantee that you'll be back next year with the Saints. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of sports talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettig along with Charlie Long. Want to thank Bobby Marks for joining us, his insights on the Pelicans and also the entire NBA. When we come back, before we go to Jeff Duncan, we'll talk a little bit about today was the final day for juniors to declare early for the 2025 NFL draft, unless you're playing in a national championship game, which means Ohio State and you know, Notre Dame's got a little bit more time for those players to come in. 70 names and not a lot of receivers, but man, tight ends, offensive line really got bolstered with a lot of juniors coming out early. That'll be very early round selections. We'll have that and a lot more right here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.